prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
The truth will set you free. We are Truth Revolution. I am Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff.
And this is where faith and reason meet.
Head on.
We love questions. We love challenging ourselves. We love looking at the Bible and seeing, are there any Bible contradictions?
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to ask a question that has been asked by many philosophers over the centuries. Do miracles actually exist? Is this a rational belief? Because we Christians say miracles can happen. But is it rational? Is it logical to believe in miracles?
Well, you know, that's something that I often ask or wonder myself. Because, I mean, you know, you pray for something and you want something to happen so bad. But, you know, and I may be getting ahead of myself, but there are outlines in the Bible that, you know, when we talk about miracles and we talk about God answering prayer, there are outlines in the Bible of saying, this is where your heart needs to be if you expect an answer.
Yeah.
You know?
Telling us how to pray if
right.
we want God to answer our prayers. And even more specific, let's look at the miracles that Jesus did. Is that legitimate? Could he really have done those things?
Well...
And we're the very first question we have to ask is, what is a miracle? Because if we're going to have a discussion, by the way, on today's show, we're not only going to talk about miracles, we're going to answer a Bible contradiction, where we have a couple listener questions, one about old earth and one about cremation versus burial. But we're jumping in on this miracle thing. Because there are famous philosophers like David Hume from a long time ago who rejected the idea of miracles, as do many atheists and many agnostics. They have rejected the notion that miracles can happen. So the definition of a miracle is really, really fundamental. Now, I'm going to play a clip from this show called The Atheist Experience.
All right.
And they the clip is these ladies, the atheists, and they're talking with a Christian who is obviously not prepared. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Let me give you a little advice. If you are talking to someone and they challenge your faith and you don't know the answer,
just admit it.
Stop talking. they're trying to get a definition of a miracle, and they nail him down to a really bad definition.
Oh, boy.
So here's the clip.
It could be me, honestly.
The Atheist Experience from Dallas, Texas.
A miracle is the way God shows us is real. It's something that could never happen without God.
So people never survive getting shot in the head without God.
Without God, she'd be dead, just like most people who get shot through the head with a bullet in their brain.
But you admit that there's some people that get shot through the head that don't die.
It's pretty rare.
Right, but it happens.
Right. 10%
That's why we call it a miracle.
A miracle is a rare event. It's not something that can't happen.
This is where it really goes downhill.
But statistically would be rare.
And in this case, it happens 10% of the time.
So anything that happens that's against the odds, which we would assume that in the universe some rare things will happen, every time a rare event happens, you just say God did it. Is that what we're calling a miracle now?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a miracle if you win the lottery, but I would say
it's
a rare event. It's in fact, it's
is the statistical odds that determine a miracle? Like, at what point is it statistically become a miracle versus a rare event?
So he's now said that a miracle is a rare event. That is the quote.
Yeah.
Of course, this is not what any theologian or philosopher would call a miracle. It's only what an unstudied Christian who's debating with two atheists would call it. Right?
Right.
I mean, they've nailed him down to this awful definition. And this is what you see a lot of times with people who are trying. Now, listen, if you're listening and you're an atheist or an agnostic, you're not sure where you sit with the faith, we love that you're listening. Part of the reason we do this show is for you, so that you can hear some of the evidence. So I don't want to put you down.
Right.
But what happens a lot of times is people get into these debates and they get pigeonholed on some stupid little definition that is not the real definition. The point is, what is a miracle?
Right. Some have said that miracles can't exist because they break natural laws, and this is impossible.
Well, right. That's what they would say. You have a natural law, and if you have a natural law like gravity, you can't break that law.
Right.
And so it's impossible for a miracle to occur. Like, let's say Jesus ascending into heaven. You know, he broke gravity. He broke the natural law of gravity. That simply can't happen because you can't break a natural law. Right. And they're saying, oh, it's not even breaking natural laws. They're just saying it's something that's rare. But I'm saying that definition, or the definition of a a miracle being something that breaks natural law. These are not good definitions of a miracle. In fact, what I'm going to say, this is important, is that miracles don't break any natural laws.
Okay.
I mean, let's think about this. What can natural stuff do?
Well, you know, okay, here we go. It can be in motion.
Okay, so you have gravity,
right?
It's pulling on the moon,
right?
Our gravity, and it's making the moon turn with us, right? And pulling on something, right?
Or you can also rest or stop being in motion.
Right. I mean, that's, so you have a few limited options here when it comes to what could actually happen, at least with natural occurrences.
Right.
Anything is a cause or an effect of some type of movement, naturally speaking.
Yeah, and that's the laws of physics, basically.
Exactly, the laws of physics. Right. Something's either in motion or it's not, and that's about all that can happen naturally. So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
How did you get to the building today?
I rode.
You rode what?
My motorcycle.
Okay. Oh my goodness, Dave. You're amazing.
Why?
Because motorcycles don't naturally drive themselves to a radio studio.
And it didn't this time.
What do you mean it didn't?
Oh, I drove it.
You drove it?
I did.
You did a miracle. You broke a natural law.
My head is getting really swelled right now.
No, obviously. Did you break a natural law?
No, you didn't. No, the wheels turn, and naturally when something turns like that, it's going to move. You know, it's...
Well, you put gas into an engine. The engine was made by people.
Well, wait a minute. The fact that I actually had money to put gas in the engine, that's kind of a miracle.
That is a miracle. Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you.
You had a few bucks for gas and your motorcycle. But the fact that you actually made a change, you used your consciousness, you used your choice to effect a change in something, doesn't mean you broke any natural laws.
Okay.
Well, you can make changes all day long. There's a cup that's sitting on my table right now. There's a natural law that says gravity's going to hold it on there unless something interferes with it. I'm lifting the cup up now. Yep, it's right
miraculous.
There. I'm not breaking the law of gravity by lifting it up. I've just interfered.
And with the natural way of things.
With what we would expect to happen if something hadn't interfered. And if we humans mess with stuff, we're used to how it works.
Right.
But when God does something, when God messes with stuff, we're just not used to how it works.
Right.
And so that's what we call a miracle.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. You know, you see these big strongman competitions where guys pull buses and airplanes and stuff like that. I can't do that.
Oh,
that must be a miracle.
Miracle.
Yeah,
yeah, but see,
but it's on a bigger scale.
Exactly.
God can do things that we can't do within the natural laws.
That is exactly right. And so he affects a change that is not a violation of natural law.
Right.
Look, by the way, just a side note, let's just throw out the fact that God's the one who designed, in our viewpoint, God's the one who designed the natural laws.
He has the blueprints. He knows all the back doors, all that stuff.
If he wants to make them, break them, or change them, he can.
Right.
But even aside from that, he's just affecting change. We affect change, and he's just affecting change. And when God does it in a way that we're not used to seeing, or that seems improbable, or that it wouldn't have happened otherwise, then that is what we would call a miracle, or at the very least, providence, God affecting something.
You know, I don't know. It's a lot like ants running around arguing whether humans can actually fly or not. You know, it's like, that's impossible. They can't do that.
That's
funny. That's the way I feel like us when we're arguing about whether miracles actually occur or not.
Yeah. Okay. So now we've nailed down our definition. I want to read a more scholarly definition of miracle.
He's going to get scholarly.
Bum, 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 bum. This is William Lane Craig, and he's quoting a source, Jacob Vernet, who was a theologian, a pastor, very influential guy, long time ago. And he says, Vernet defines miracle as, quote, a striking work which is outside the ordinary course of nature and which is done by God's almighty will, such that witnesses thereof regard it as extraordinary and supernatural.
That was actually very well put.
That was very well put. He says, witnesses regard it as extraordinary. Uh-huh. He doesn't say it's out of natural law.
Right.
He actually says, It is outside of what normally happens.
Right. He did say, but he said it's outside of the ordinary course of nature. We talk about ordinary.
Yeah.
We see ordinary every day, but there are some extraordinary things that can happen within the laws of nature.
And so he's not talking about any rare event. He's talking about something that's so outside the course of nature that God specifically did himself.
Right.
That we would regard as extraordinary. That's a miracle. Now, we have a couple listener questions that we want to make sure we get to today. We're going to come back to this miracle thing. We're not going to forget about it. But we do have some very important questions from listeners that we definitely want to hit.
I got a question. All right.
All right.
This question is from Diane.
Okay.
Okay. How do you reconcile your old earth belief with the teaching that there was no death before sin? I always believed that sin was the catalyst for death.
Adam and Eve were approximately 8 billion years old. No, I'm just kidding.
My mouth dropped. Did you see my jaw hit the floor? I was like, what? What are you saying, Jeff? I know,
they were older than the earth, actually, 8 billion years old. No, this is, I love this question. Thank you, Diane, for this question. Because we do, on this show, we suggest that the earth is very old.
Right.
We also say if a Christian wants to believe in a young earth, they can. That's a prerogative. We can debate this. We don't want to divide over it, but we can debate it. So what is our view? If the earth or the universe really is old, doesn't that mean there was death before the fall of mankind, before sin? That would be a problem, it seems like, for Christians.
Right. It seems like it could be, you know, but that all depends on the time frame. And you know,
well, I mean, let's read the Bible. How about that?
Right, okay.
Let's read the Bible.
How novel.
Genesis 2:17. I want you to pay attention to who God says will die.
Okay.
Says, you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die.
Hmm.
Who does God say is going to die?
You.
Yeah, you. He's talking to Adam and Eve. You will die. He doesn't actually say, then finally animals and plants and everything else will start to die. He says, you, Adam and Eve, will die.
Okay.
And let's jump to Romans 5, chapter 5, verse 12. This is another verse that's talking about how sin and death entered the world. Romans 5:12 says this.
As therefore, just as sin entered through the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way, death came to all people.
What? Wait a minute. In this way, death came to all things? All plants? All animals? No.
Plankton.
All plankton.
Sorry, I just blurt things out there sometimes.
To all jellyfish. Now, in this way, death came to all people. Death came to people when Adam sinned. And if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, verse 14 to 19, God is cursing the serpent and the woman and man. Mm-hmm. And these are the repercussions for sin. And he lists a lot of curses, including the death of Adam and Eve and mankind. Thistles will be produced, sweat, death for humans, childbirth pain will be increased, snakes are going to have to crawl on their bellies.
Stop, I'm getting depressed.
But nowhere in there does God say, and now plants and animals will die too. I find that interesting. In his grand curse of the effects of sin, he does not say plants and animals will die. That's interesting, because perhaps that was already the nature of things.
I was actually going to mention that because, I mean, maybe we just become ordinary.
Yeah.
You know, just like everything else.
Just like everything else.
Because honestly, I mean, with the way rabbits reproduce.
No joke.
Yeah, so.
And honestly, to be real honest, I love my young earther friends, mm-hmm. but they would have this problem too. Death before the fall. I just want to point this out. We don't know how long Adam and Eve lived in the garden.
Right.
Many animals reproduce very quickly, and some have very short lifespans. If Adam and Eve lived in the garden for more than 24 hours, which it doesn't say how long they lived in there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just one of the days. They could have lived there for years. If they lived for more than 24 hours, there's animals who have a 24-hour lifespan. Plus, Adam and Eve ate plants, which stopped a natural life cycle of a living thing. Otherwise known as death. They ate plant. They killed
right.
when Adam and Eve ate. So even a young earther would have to, unless you believe that Adam and Eve didn't eat anything, you really have to agree that there was death before the fall of some kind.
Hmm.
Side note, I know we're coming up to a break, and I want you to go to truthrevolution.tv.
Right.
And come on out to Revolution Church.
Yes. And on truthrevolution.tv, you can check out True Shots, old shows.
Yeah.
You know.
All sorts of stuff. Truthrevolution.tv. Come on out to Revolution Church. Starts 10:15 Sunday mornings. If you're not in Salina, Kansas, or nearby, you can also watch live online.
There you go.
So check it out. Get there from truthrevolution.tv. On the other side of the break, I want to finish talking about Adam and Eve. Was there death before the fall? And did they eat meat?
Huh.
Possibly. All right, truthrevolution.tv, miracles, Adam and Eve on the other side of this break.
You're invited to Revolution Church this Sunday. Don't wear a suit and tie. Nobody else does. Just come as you are. Revolution Church has a special kids program planned, rocking music, and teaching that actually matters for real life. 10:15 this Sunday morning, just music, teaching, and a program for the kids. 10:15 this Sunday morning. Check us out online, SalinaRevolution.com. www.salinarevolution.com.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Many people say Jesus never claimed to be God.
Technically, they're right. He never said, "I am Jehovah God, the creator of the universe," like we in the 21st century might expect.
So, how do we know he was God?
We have to see what people in his century thought.
The Jewish government still pressed to have him put to death for blasphemy.
That was even recorded by the Roman historian Josephus, who was not a Christian.
Plus, people worshipped him, and he accepted their worship, which was something only God was allowed to do.
He said, "I and the Father are one," which was followed up by people trying to kill him for claiming to be God.
And one of the best proofs, he referred to himself as the I Am, a name reserved for God alone.
Clearly, when you understand their culture, their language, their religion, they all knew, and we should know too, Jesus claimed to be God, without a doubt.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same: to be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back.
And Adam and Eve, here's a question I want you... We're talking about miracles today. Can miracles occur? But Adam and Eve, the listener question was, how do you reconcile old earth with the teaching there's no death before sin?
Right.
Well, as we've seen in the Bible, the only thing that God said is that there's going to be human death after the fall. That's all the Bible says. Now, Adam and Eve ate plants. They caused plant death before the fall. But nowhere, this blew my mind when I realized it, nowhere does God forbid Adam and Eve from eating meat. Nowhere.
Right.
He makes a special pronunciation that they could eat any plant except one.
Yes.
But he never denies them meat. So it's entirely possible that they ate meat. So, but that's a total side note. I don't want to argue that. That's just a side note. But biblically, after the fall, it was mankind who died, especially in a spiritual way and a physical way. It wasn't anything else that received the curse of death.
How would you like to be that cow? You know, Adam says, "I will name you a cow. Now come sit on my plate."
"I name you a hamburger." Adam, don't you think that's a little long for a name? Okay, cow.
I got a question.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, that's the answer for that question there. Thanks for sending that in, Diane. We appreciate it. Now, we have another listener question hopefully we're going to get to today about cremation. But first, we have to continue our discussion about miracles. We gave that scholarly definition of miracles. And really, the definition is a striking work which is outside the ordinary course of nature, which is done by God's almighty will, such that witnesses thereof regard it as extraordinary or supernatural, but not necessarily breaking a natural law.
Right.
God's just affecting change. Right. And when God does it in a way that we would perceive as extraordinary, that's a miracle.
Right. And there are certain I guess, extremes that laws will have. And God can run on those outside extremes, and we perceive that as...
Well, I wouldn't even call it an outside extreme.
No.
Because gravity works, and I can pick up this cup, and I've affected change of the cup, picking it up, without being extreme at all, for me.
Right.
But you would say, oh, that was anti-grav. No, that wasn't anti-gravity. I just picked the cup up.
Actually, it is kind of.
But see, I've affected change.
You're defying gravity.
I've just affected change. That's what God is doing.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, but if something really is a miracle, here's the next big question. We have a quote from Christopher Hitchens, the atheist. If there really is a miracle, what if there's a potential natural explanation? If you can explain the miracle away naturally, does that mean you should not believe in a miracle? Listen to Christopher Hitchens talking in part about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He's talking here about David Hume, a philosopher, and he's in the middle of a debate. So we're going to jump into the middle of this debate. Listen to what he says about miracles.
A sentence or two from David Hume would correct what you said. A miracle is defined not as a part of the natural order, but as a suspension of the natural order.
No, an intervention. You can't say
of the Big Bang, which is the foundation of the natural order.
Oh, okay, sorry, I just got to jump in. You see, he's already given an incorrect definition of miracle. He says a suspension of the natural order. I believe it was Frank Turek he was debating with, and Turek's like, no, you got that wrong.
Right.
But anyway, listen to what he continues to say.
That it's a suspension of what it starts. You may not do that. However, if you meet someone in the street who you yesterday saw executed, you can say either that an extraordinary miracle has occurred or that you are under a very grave misapprehension.
Hmm.
And David Hume's logic on this, I think, is quite irrefutable. He says, what is more likely, that the laws of nature have been suspended in your favor and in a way that you approve, or that you've made a mistake?
Hmm.
And in each case, you must, and especially if you didn't see it yourself and you're hearing it from someone who says that they did.
Okay, obviously he's referencing the resurrection.
He's good.
Like, oh yeah. When you hear that quote, you're like, dude, that's true. Like, what if you saw someone die and the next day you saw them alive? Would you automatically assume that a miracle happened, or would you think, oh, I must have seen it incorrectly?
And that English accent just makes him sound so much more.
Yeah, accents make you sound. I'm going to start talking with an accent.
Don't do it, please.
Okay, so.
Yeah, that makes you.
All right. But the question is, well, look, they saw Jesus die, then they saw him alive. Isn't it more reasonable to believe that they saw it wrong?
Yeah.
Well, then a guy rose from the dead?
Right.
Well, here's the big difference, which Hitchens conveniently leaves out. What if you met someone on the street who yesterday you saw executed? We could be mistaken that he was executed. But what if you knew someone who actually had the ability to do miracles, like Jesus? You had witnessed them do miracles. And then he predicted, not only was I doing these miracles, but I predict I'm going to rise from the dead 3 days after I die.
Right.
And all the other things that were written about him, by the way, 1,000 years ahead of time, had been fulfilled in his life and in his birth and in his lineage. And those writings also 1,000 years earlier predicted that he would rise from the dead. And then he was put to death by professional executioners who then guarded his gravesite only to have it somehow opened up and emptied a few days later. And the government themselves saying, we don't know how it happened, but the grave is empty. And then you saw him alive.
Did anything specific like that ever happen to any one person?
I'm trying to think.
That's pretty specific.
Oh, Jesus. That was Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
You see, if that happened, it wouldn't be like, I thought he was dead, but I guess not. No, it'd be like, all the evidence suggested he had the power and ability to rise from the dead, and here he is. It looks like he did.
Right. And not only that, but I mean, these people were firsthand witnesses right there, you know, and we talk about, you know, when we've talked about the execution of Jesus, man, it's not like the Romans were amateurs.
Right.
You know,
right.
They had years and years of experience. And
we know he was dead, and we know the tomb was empty 3 days later, even though the government's regarding it, and we know the government doesn't have the body. I mean, this is pretty clear cut. It's not like Hitchens just said, oh, you saw a guy die and then you saw him alive and what's more likely?
Right.
No, there were prophecies, there were miracles involved. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to come back to this miracle thing and ask, like, well, what if something natural happens, like when the Red Sea was parted?
Right.
What if it was just like a river blockage upstream?
Ah.
Does it still count as a miracle? But first, we have to do something very important.
Bible contradiction.
All right, today's Bible contradiction.
Yes.
Once I can find it. is brought to you by the Thinking Atheists.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So, they want to know.
I hope they're thinking hard.
They have inquiring minds. Who brought the Capernaum centurion's request to Jesus? You know, Matthew.
Okay.
Matthew 8:5 says, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. Luke 7:3 says he sent some elders of the Jews asking him to come in as a servant. And then a third one, we're not even going to cover that one because it's they're obviously overkilling.
Okay.
And basically.
So the point is in Matthew, the centurion comes himself to Jesus
right.
to ask for a miracle.
Yes.
And in Luke, he sends somebody else to ask.
Right.
Both of these accounts are correct.
What?
It was simply a centurion sending representatives. Let's say we're going to have a church picnic, okay? I mean, I could make good with a centurion or a king or some official like this guy was. Mm-hmm. Let's just take it naturally. Let's say we're having a church picnic. I tell my secretary, hey, we're going to have a picnic. Would you find someone to cook something? And she's going to go, what's she going to do? She's going to go to a guy named Barry and say, hey, Jeff needs you to cook hot dogs. The guy then, in turn, he's going to report something like, yeah, yesterday Jeff asked that I cook hot dogs for our meal.
And he'd be right.
He would be right. Although, if you want to be technical, it could seem like a contradiction.
No, he lied.
Because Jeff didn't ask him to cook hot dogs for a meal. Monica asked him to cook hot dogs for a picnic.
Barry's just an habitual liar.
And Jeff only asked Monica to cook something for someone. No, but come on, we all know there's no contradiction here.
Right.
It's how we communicate what actually transcribed. So we have the book of Matthew giving the short account, which is, hey, this centurion asked Jesus to do something. Mm-hmm. And then we have the book of Luke giving, which, by the way, Luke was a doctor, so it would totally make sense that he would give the longer, more detailed description.
Probably in chicken scratch, I'm sure.
Exactly. And that's how we solve that Bible contradiction fairly easily.
Bible contradiction.
Jeff, that was easy.
That was easy.
You did all the work.
Okay. So, really quickly, I have a feeling we're going to do more offline today.
Yes.
Online. If you want to hear more of this show, go to truthrevolution.tv. We're going to talk more about it there.
Right. Maybe 5-10 minutes?
Yeah, something like that. 10 minutes. I don't know. Whatever. And so we're going to talk more about it there. Because what if the parting of the Red Sea was just a river blockage? What if when Jesus healed the paralytic, a guy's just vertebrae just happened to become unstuck?
Right.
What if the plagues of Egypt were just common in those times?
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, flies and locusts and frogs. What if that stuff just happened? Does this prove miracles are nothing but natural?
Then I guess maybe we ought to turn around and take a look at the timing of the thing.
Stop answering the question before we get there.
I'm sorry. Erase that. Scratch it. I said nothing.
That was
I'm like
awesome.
Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah.
I know nothing.
No. That's good. That's exactly what we're going to talk about. Okay. But we're going to make some clarifications as to how that should work and when you can count it as a miracle. But we do have something very interesting. We have got another listener question that I want to make sure we absolutely get to today. So let's go ahead and hit that.
I got a question.
All right. This listener's question comes in and says, well, certainly burial is most common from a form in the Bible.
And his question is really simple. He just says cremation.
Right.
Is it a curse or God allowed?
Right.
And we would agree. Yeah, burial is the most common form in the Bible. There's burial all over the place. And now there are some cremations in the Bible, but usually it's when the body was badly mutilated.
Right.
So we have to understand, we're going to say that burial is the biblical pattern, but it's a report, not a rule.
Right.
Okay, this is what is reported to us as the normal thing that people in the Bible did. But we have to remember that burial better represents the hope in our own resurrection. At least that's what a lot of Christians will believe. I would agree. Because we're burying ourselves like Jesus, and then he's going to raise us with a physical body like Jesus. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to have a physical body like Jesus did. 1 Corinthians 15 says, so the resurrection of dead, our body is sown a perishable body, it can be raised imperishable. It's sown in dishonor, it's raised in glory. It's sown in weakness, raised in power. Sown a natural body, raised a spiritual body. And this is our hope, that we are raised with an actual body. And so cremation can sometimes be perceived as destroying your body, as if there's no hope. But that's not what we want to do. Now, I'm not saying cremation is bad. It's not. Jesus can raise anybody. I mean, normal bodies go to dust anyway. So, short story, either one's acceptable. Hey, truthrevolution.tv. Check us online for more information.
Truth Revolution.
And we are online.
That's right. So let's go ahead and talk about this. I mean, what if there was a natural explanation for America? Because I don't know about you, but when I was growing up in church, people would often say, you know, I heard that when Moses parted the Red Sea, you know, what really happened was there was like a blockage upstream.
Right.
And it just happened to be like, you know, that morning. And so they walked across and it wasn't really an actual miracle. Mm-hmm. Had you ever heard anyone say that?
No, but I've often actually sat and thought about that, believe it or not. I mean,
sure.
Because, you know, we as finite beings, we like to know that we know how things work, because when we begin to not know how things work, we feel a little out of control. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we do feel out of control.
And so I sit around sometimes and think about that and try and think, well, how would this actually happen? But I never think about it in the aspect of, well, God couldn't have done this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it must have been a natural, you know, happening.
Yeah, but that's where a lot of maybe atheists or agnostics would go. Mm-hmm. They'd say, look, if I can find a naturalistic explanation, then this must mean that God wasn't involved in this.
Right.
But, I mean, does that really prove that miracles are nothing but natural? And first of all, I think I'd like to point out that any explanation for these biblical miracles are hypothetical explanations.
Definitely.
At best.
Right.
I mean, we have not found evidence of a river blockage that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
We have not found evidence that the guy who Jesus healed that was paralyzed, you know, had a vertebrae that was able to be fixed on its own. We haven't found anything like this. And so these hypothetical explanations that we've come up with for these miracles are just that. They're hypothetical right. explanations. But there is this big, big deal, as you pointed out earlier, called timing.
Right.
The timing of a miracle is everything. Like my favorite reasoning or example of this is the lottery. I'm going to write down six numbers on a piece of paper, right? And those numbers mean nothing. Why do they mean nothing, Dave? I mean, I've wrote down six numbers. Well,
they're fairly random.
They are fairly random.
Unless they actually mean something to you.
Well, I like the numbers.
They're your favorite numbers?
They're my favorite numbers. But do they hold any intrinsic value?
Well, numbers actually do hold value in and of themselves.
Ah, stop it.
Sorry, I'm being too literal.
He's
here.
Slapping me around today. Yeah, they do have value. But I mean, any value for lottery?
Right, no.
No, they don't. I mean, I can go to the lottery office all day long and be like, hey, I got six numbers on a piece of paper.
Unless, of course, you know the guy that's picking the numbers, and then it does, you know.
The only way it means anything is if you exchanged money for those numbers,
mm-hmm.
if you have them on the proper piece of paper, and if you bought the right numbers on the right day before the drawing.
Right.
There's a bunch of circumstances that have to come into play here. Those numbers then become the numbers that were once meaningless when given the right time, the right place, the right location, exchanged for the right information.
I see where you're going.
Become
there.
Very powerful. Right. Likewise, there's nothing special about a sea being dammed up unless it happened the exact moment Moses struck it with a staff
right.
and the exact time when the Israelites, a million people, needed to cross this ocean.
Right.
I mean, that we could say, okay, you know, well, seas or rivers have been dammed up before in history of the world, but could you imagine if on a D-Day, the American soldiers needed to run, and they turned around and someone said, I tell this sea to break apart. And then the Atlantic Ocean just broke out apart in front of them, and everybody walked across, and then as soon as the Germans got inside, it collapsed back on them. I mean, that would be miraculous.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. The war would have been over a lot quicker. You're right. And because timing does, the effect of timing on
yes.
certain things happening can tell whether that's actually a miracle or not.
That's right. You know, yeah. Moses, let's say we find out that these plagues are have natural reasons to occur in Egypt. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. But the fact that every single time Moses said, this time tomorrow it's going to happen, and then it did, not just once, not just twice, but three, four, five, six, seven times.
Right.
That's a big deal.
It is.
And so, you know, a natural explanation doesn't always rule out a supernatural cause.
Right.
Let me say that again. A natural explanation doesn't always rule out a supernatural cause.
Right. And you know, we've talked about before how God likes to work within the natural framework, the natural order of things.
Yes.
Like, you know, when he brought Lazarus back from the dead,
yeah,
he walked to Lazarus.
Yeah, think
he
about that,
for
friends.
Directions.
It's crazy.
He mourned for Lazarus' death before he looked and said, Lazarus, come forth.
Yeah.
And then Lazarus came forth.
He did everything normal and natural, and then he raised the dude from the dead.
Then, of course, you know, maybe Lazarus was just... maybe that's just when he was going to be resurrected, or maybe when he was going to come back to life and Jesus just happened to be there at the right time.
That's right. Maybe there's like a natural shock paddle. What do you call those things to shock someone's heart?
Yeah,
maybe
defibrillators.
Maybe there was a natural defibrillator in that cave and Jesus just happened to get it right at the moment that the rocks defibrillated his...
Right.
This is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You know, so you know, God does work within the natural order of things. So when we can find a natural explanation for a miracle, that doesn't necessarily mean that God did not have his hand in it.
Right. Here's a quote from William Lake Craig, his book, Reasonable Faith. And essentially what he's getting at is the same thing we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Timing counts. He says, as for Spinoza, and Spinoza is a philosopher that he's debating in this book. He says, as for Spinoza's charge that a supposed miracle may be caused by an unknown law of nature, so he's saying there's laws of nature that we don't know yet, and there's a law of nature that might have caused Lazarus to raise from the dead.
Right.
Okay. Leclerc responded that it then becomes inexplicable why such events do not recur, and why these mysterious laws operated coincidentally at the moment of Jesus' command.
Really?
Vernet replied that this possibility is negligible when numerous and various miracles occur. And others, granted that such unknown laws might be God's means of acting within the course of nature.
Right.
So in other words, timing counts.
It does.
Even if you can find a natural explanation for a miracle, timing counts.
Right, because getting back to Moses, he does something, like, you know, stretches his staff across the water and it parts.
Yeah.
You know, 5 minutes before that, he looks awful dumb.
Yeah. You know, let's just think of like the most common predictable thing in the world.
Okay.
A red light changing to a green light.
There you go.
Okay. It's predictable. It's on a stinking timer.
It is.
But if someone wasn't looking at it and facing away, they're looking at you and they just said, green light. And then it changed to a green light.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this like 20 times. You'd be like, how are you doing that? You'd want to know because the timing is so suspicious, even on something that is timed.
Right.
Even on something you can count in your head and time it. If someone got it right enough times, you'd want to know how they did
it. You'd be looking around for mirrors and stuff.
Right. And we're not talking about traffic lights stopping here. We're talking about people being raised from the dead.
Right.
Water being turned into wine, a sea being parted, and the timing is perfect. So even if we can find a natural explanation, timing counts. So that's a really, really big deal. So, hey, want to thank you guys for listening to the Truth Revolution Show. We got a lot more information on this, but maybe we'll have to hit it on another week.
There you go.
So thanks for coming to TruthRevolution.tv. Would you consider donating and helping us out? We're expanding.
We are doing
great things by the will of God, by the providence of God. Maybe it's a miracle.
Nice tie in there.
Maybe your gift would be a miracle. I don't know. Also, we're looking for volunteers if you want to work on a website or do some editing on our truth shots, things like that. So let me know. Hit us up. TruthRevolution.tv. You're already here. So why not contact us with a question or a challenge?
A challenge. We love challenges.
We do. So. Love to hear them. So, hey, thanks for listening, guys. Really, we do this show for you. We do this show for the glory of God and Jesus Christ. And
amen.
I hope that you'll come to see that it's reasonable to believe in him. This is where faith and reason meet. And truth is true, whether it's in science or religion. And God is the one who's ultimately the true creator of the universe, Jesus Christ.
Amen.
The one and only. So put your faith in him and trust him. Find eternal life. Come on out to Revolution Church. TruthRevolution.tv.